This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area, Thursday, April 12, 2012. In today's stories, Governor Hickenlooper wants you to save water. San Miguel County debating medical marijuana. Bent to Brooklyn has capital coverage about the state budget. Tammy Meck has the KVNF sports report. And it looks like the public will have another opportunity to comment to the BLM about oil and gas development and any other issues of importance later this month. And finally, a late addition, some news from the other side of the line. Governor John Hickenlooper called for radically increased water conservation and the possibility of new dams on Tuesday as part of a discussion about supply and demand of the Colorado River. At the State of the Rockies Forum at Colorado College, Hickenlooper referred to examples from other cities around the world where residents have reduced consumption and increased efficiency in their use of water. The Denver Post reports that Denver has done better than most U.S. cities, with residents reducing use by 20% in the past 10 years. But Hickenlooper thinks we can do better. U.S. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar, a former Colorado senator, also spoke about the pressures on the Colorado River during the conference. However, state officials support two major projects that would divert more river water across the Continental Divide to sustain Front Range urban communities. Two different pipeline projects would divert an additional 100,000 acre-feet or more of water from the Upper Colorado River Basin in Wyoming to the Front Range. A state-backed task force is exploring one of these ideas. Drought and population growth are worsening the situation of the already over-allocated Colorado River as users try to share the water and still support dependent industries like agriculture, hydropower, and tourism. The Denver Post reports that a coalition of 25 environmental advocacy groups submitted a petition this week urging U.S. and Mexican leaders to ensure that some water reaches the depleted delta where river water once flowed into the Gulf of California. The state budget got its first airing on the full House floor on Wednesday. Lawmakers offered dozens of amendments to the roughly $19 billion bill. The more than nine-hour debate covered everything from education and prisons to public funding for vasectomies. But as Bent to Brooklyn reports, most of the contentious issues had already been resolved.
Passing a balanced budget is the only thing the state legislature is required to do under the Constitution, and each year it's the product of months of negotiations and, when it reaches the floor, a long debate. Wednesday was no exception. The House ended up making a few changes. Republican leaders passed two amendments to cut roughly $5.5 million from state prisons and up to 45 jobs.
As prison populations have declined in the state of Colorado, prison spending has continued to grow, and it's grown and grown to the point where it's been out of control.
That's Republican Assistant Majority Leader Mark Waller of Colorado Springs. His amendment would shift corrections funding to pay for more full-day kindergarten. Democratic Representative Nancy Todd of Aurora supported the proposal.
We have a choice in our state whether we continue to incarcerate or to educate, and I think that's one of the things that this particular amendment is really addressing.
But GOP Budget Committee member John Becker of Fort Morgan says cutting several million dollars from state prisons is irresponsible and would do little for full-day kindergarten.
This doesn't even come close to funding it. But what you're going to end up doing could likely close down a rural prison. You could devastate a community and end up costing us, at the end, more money than you're putting into this K-12 full-day kindergarten program.
Democrats, who have a one-seat disadvantage in the House, offered the vast majority of the amendments. Most failed, including several measures to strip money from private prisons. One Democrat even proposed a public funding ban for erectile dysfunction treatments and vasectomies to try and show solidarity with the national fight over women's health. Republican B.J. Nickel of Loveland says it's plain politics with the budget.
I really feel that a page has been taken directly from Nancy Pelosi's playbook in bringing Washington, D.C. style politics to Colorado to try to corrupt our budget process.
There's no need to get snippy.
That's Representative Dan Pabon of Denver. He ultimately withdrew his proposal, but not before getting in a few more puns.
I know that this amendment, hits many below the belt. It's important that we take firm positions down here.
And while most of the debate fell along party lines, the budget actually has widespread support, and legislative leaders in both parties have endorsed it. Democratic Budget Committee member Claire Levy of Boulder says the bipartisan Joint Budget Committee already worked through the thorniest issues.
Whether we were going to fund increases in the cost of health insurance, life insurance, and dental insurance for state employees or not, whether we were going to force a pay cut or layoffs among state employees or not, and I think we resolved those fairly.
More money in the revenue forecast also helped negotiations. Lawmakers were able to preserve a property tax break for seniors and also restore cuts to K-12 schools and higher education. Last year, 80 out of 100 lawmakers voted for the budget, and some legislators say it could get even more support this year. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Rocky Mountain Community Radio is supported by the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, partnering with the Women's Foundation of Colorado to promote economic self-sufficiency of women and girls.
A committee studying whether or not to seek a national park designation for Colorado National Monument is out gathering public input. The first meeting was last night, and the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that more than 90 Redlands area residents showed up at the meeting at Redlands Middle School. The Sentinel reports that many who spoke expressed opposition towards the national park designation and impacts like increased traffic. But some also showed enthusiasm for the possible economic boon that could come from giving the monument greater visibility. After three more meetings, the committee will consider comments from attendees and decide whether to recommend that members of Colorado's congressional delegation seek a status change. There will be a second open house tonight at the Fruita Community Center, as well as two next week in Grand Junction and Glade Park. All open houses run from 4 to 7 p.m. San Miguel County commissioners are revisiting land use codes to keep the county from becoming a medical marijuana mecca. The Telluride Daily Planet reports that last week, the commissioners reviewed planning department recommendations for definitions of permitted medical marijuana businesses. There are currently no specific land use regulations for these businesses. These recommendations follow previous discussions with county staff and business owners. The Planet reports that while the commissioners generally support allowing growing and distribution of medical marijuana in their jurisdiction, they expressed concern that large-scale growers would flock to San Miguel County as other communities and counties in the area prohibit growing. The Planet reports that Commissioner Art Goodtime said he'd like to see medical marijuana licensing operate similarly to liquor licensing. And both the sheriff and county officials said that, much like the liquor code, most of the burden falls on local law enforcement rather than state, and in the case of medical marijuana, said there is a lack of communication and direction from the state. Local medical marijuana businesses currently work under a temporary development license. There are only four of them in the unincorporated areas of San Miguel County. The temporary permits expire June 30th, when local governments can adopt stricter local licensing requirements. If not, they default to the state's minimum requirements. The state moratorium on new medical marijuana establishments will be lifted on July 1st. The commissioners will decide whether to approve the planning department's recommendations, amend or reject them in their next meeting on May 9th. A public hearing will be held during the meeting. In this week's sports report, Tammy Mack brings us the latest scores in area prep baseball and talks a little bit about how athletes now qualify for state competition in track and field.
On Monday, Cedar Ridge high jumper Reed Gates leapt into the Bruins record book. According to track coach Kirby Henderson, Gates cleared 6 feet, 7 1/4 inches at Grand Junction to beat Chris Payne's 1994 record by 1/4 inch. Gates, a sophomore, placed 5th in the 2011 state meet with a height of 6 feet 2 inches. He and teammate Danny Martinez, who placed 4th in 2011, have largely dominated the event in Western Slope competition, and both should again qualify for state this season. If you haven't followed track in recent years, a major change occurred 3 years ago in how athletes qualify for the state meet. Until recently, athletes' performances had to meet a certain time, distance, or height set by the Colorado High School Activities Association, or CHASA, and they had to do it at a qualifying meet, where instruments were used to make precise measurements. Since most schools lacked the instruments to record wind direction and speed, among other factors, most meets throughout the season weren't qualifying meets. Athletes typically had to wait until the regional meet, often held at a college venue. At regional meets, the top three performers in each event automatically qualified, and any athletes to make or exceed the CHASA standards also qualified. Since some regions are stronger than others, that sometimes meant that some of the top athletes in the state weren't state qualifiers. Beginning in 2010, the CHASA accepted only the top 18 performers from across the state for 4A and 5A schools, and in 2011, all 1, 2, and 3A schools adopted the new qualification standards. And since accurate instruments are now widely available, most meets are qualifying meets. The majority of local athletes who have to compete under both sets of standards say they prefer the new standards because now, virtually every meet is an opportunity for them to qualify for state. That one good throw or clean relay or clearing of a high jump bar can put them in the top 18. The higher the state ranking, the more likely the performance will remain in the top 18. For Gates, his record-setting jump wasn't performed at a qualifying meet, but he and Martinez are both in the top 18 and will have six more meets, thus six more opportunities to better their jump this season, which is currently 6'6". For the record, the best high jump recorded in the state's history was by a 3A jumper from Buena Vista, who cleared 7'2¼" back in 1991. Checking in on the baseball teams from across the KVNF listening area, Nucla lost to Dolores 8-4 on Tuesday. They face Dove Creek this Saturday at 11 at Nucla. Cedar Ridge is now 8-1 at the top of the 3A Western Slope League standings after sweeping a doubleheader Saturday at Roaring Fork. The Bruins led the series with a 6-run first inning in Game 1. They travel to Aspen to face the Skiers this Saturday. Hotchkiss and Olathe split a doubleheader Saturday, with the Pirates claiming a 6-1 win in Game 1. Olathe topped Gunnison 21-12 on Tuesday and will travel to Coleridge this Saturday for a pair of games beginning at 11. Hotchkiss travels to Gunnison for two games on Saturday. The Montrose Indians are now 9-1 after defeating Fruita Monument on Tuesday. They have the weekend off and will face Grand Junction High School at Grand Junction next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Delta suffered a crushing 21-0 loss on Tuesday to Durango. The Panthers host Moffat County in a doubleheader this Saturday beginning at 11. The Paonia Eagles are hoping to keep their 8-game winning streak alive when they host a non-conference doubleheader against Steamboat this Saturday, with Game 1 scheduled to begin at 11 a.m. Paonia claimed two conference wins last Saturday, topping Meeker 14-1 and 10-0. For KVNF News, I'm Tammy Meck with your weekly sports report.
The Bureau of Land Management's Southwest Resource Advisory Council will meet at the end of the month in Hotchkiss. Agenda topics include the Gunnison sage-grouse and the August 2012 oil and gas lease sale, as well as other topics. The Southwest Resource Advisory Council is one of three advisory councils to the state BLM office. RAC members are appointed by the Secretary of the Interior to represent a broad range of public land interests. The meeting will be on Friday, April 27th at Hotchkiss Memorial Hall. The meeting begins at 9 a.m. and is open to the public. However, the public comment period is scheduled for 11:30 a.m. Individuals who want to make a statement during the public comment period should register with the BLM by sending an email to sborders@blm.gov by Wednesday, April 25th. And finally, here's a late addition to this morning's news, from the other side of the line. An earthquake has shaken a remote area of southern Utah. The Denver Post reports officials say it was felt by some people, but there have been no reports of injury or damage. The U.S. Geological Survey says the 4.3 magnitude earthquake struck about 9:30 p.m. last night. It was centered 18 miles east of the town of Panguitch, about 200 miles south of Salt Lake City. That's just a bit north of Bryce Canyon National Park. Bryce Canyon was named for Ebenezer Bryce, an early rancher who said it was a heck of a place to lose a cow. Actually, he used that word H-E double hockey sticks. This concludes the KVNF Morning Newscast. Thanks for tuning in. Stay tuned now for Arizona and the sweet sound. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria. Good day.